Now, you think you understand this, the way this works here?
Sure.
You understand that perfectly?
Yeah.
All right. Would you go into my office for a minute?
It's stuck.
Why are you trying to go through a locked door?
You told me to.
If I told you to jump out the window, would you do that?
No.
It's too bad. I had some hope for that.
This elephant had this little dwarf trainer, and just used to put a little ballerina skirt on that elephant. I'd go around the circuit, like that. That's why I thought it was so laughable at the time. There's a rumor going around the circus that dwarf and the elephant were lovers. Elephant squash. Shoot the elephant. I don't know whether it's because of rumor or not, but they're buried together. Great big tombstone.
Go on, Mama.
You sure that little asshole's through?
Well, the legendary Tim Conway passed away this week at the age of 85, and I had the pleasure of speaking to Tim back in 2013, and I asked him how he came up with the characters of Mr. Tudball and Dorf.
Well, my mother's friends would come over on Sunday to eat, and they all talk like this. So I think that Mr. Tudball came from that.
I would think so.
The others, I have no idea.
Not a clue. Not a clue. So then in sixth and seventh grade, you discovered you had dyslexia. Let me pronounce that right. Dyslexia.
Which you, that's good. Maybe you have it too.
Yeah, maybe I do. Which you said, you know, somehow it contributed to your comical outlook on life. I mean, kids laughed at you as a result? Like, how did you find comedy?
Well, every once in a while, you'd have to get up and read aloud to the class. And when I did, I put words into sentences that were never there. And kids thought I was really actually being funny. So I just decided, what the heck, the laughs are good, and it makes me feel happy. So, I'll just continue with it.
Well, you did all kinds of other shows, too, in the 60s. You did the Dean Martin Show and Danny Kaye and Red Skelton, but it was the Gary Moore Show where you first met Carol Burnett.
So Carol came out, and she was doing her show, and I had met her on the Gary Moore Show, and she said, come out and do my show. And I said, okay. I said, how many are you doing a year? And she said, we would like you to do all 33 shows. And I said, well, I don't want to tie myself down that much. So I'll tell you what, I'll do 32. And the last week, I'll guest on somebody's show. Oh, and nice. I would always guest on her show.
Wow.
Wow.
So really,
33.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it was just 33.
Yeah.
So Carol asked you to do the series in the beginning. Now, it was on for 11 seasons from 67 to 78. And as a kid, I was under the illusion that you were a regular for all of those 11 years. And even though you were frequent and much beloved guest star, you were only a regular for the last three seasons of the series. That's crazy.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, I had to keep that open time, you know, in case I was asked to do another show. And I never was. So I did all 33.
You did.
Every year.
You did, though. You did. You had the Tim Conway Show in the early 70s. You did an hour variety show.
Yes. I think I hold the record, too, for shows being canceled.
Oh. It might be Don Rickles.
It might be Don Rickles. Yeah. Oh, well, Don and I are tied, yeah. But we were doing one show. It was a half-hour show, and 15 minutes into the show, the guy came out, the producer, and said, "Stop doing this." Okay.
Really?
Why? Well, the network is canceling it.
Huh.
Okay. All right. And they canceled it in Cleveland, actually. It started in Cleveland.
Really?
Everything always.
Your hometown. So you did Carol so many times. You know, what, and then obviously a regular. Tell me about your experience working with Carol and Harvey and Vicky on the show.
Well, she was the most marvelous person you would ever want to meet. I mean, she just had, she had no, desire to be the star of the show, although she was, and Harvey had a desire to be the star of the show, which he wasn't, and I told him that, you know.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Harvey and I became the best of friends, and he was probably the smartest guy I've ever known, but couldn't tie his own shoes, so I could put him on something terrible and would plan to do that every day.
Well, you know, everybody knows that it obviously didn't take much to throw him, you know, in a
that's
sketch.
Correct, yeah.
But
he was always telling me, you know, you can't laugh on television because, you know, that it looks so phony. And he would sit there and laugh through the whole thing, you know. So.
Well, you're a funny guy. Well, Carol said it was never, you know, your intention to throw anyone, but you always left room for some ad-libbing to surprise your target. So you made it a mission to not only make the audience laugh, but the performers you were on stage with, obviously, as well.
That's correct, yes. Very poor performance. You know.
But you did two. You shot the episode when you did it. You shot, didn't you shoot it twice in one day?
Yes.
So did you do it different?
In the afternoon, and then the later show at night when we had an audience, we would just go nuts, you know, and throw in anything we thought of, and that's what usually ended up on the air.
So did you do something different in rehearsal, or did you play it pretty straight during rehearsal?
The first rehearsal in the afternoon, I would play it straight so Harvey could figure out where we were in the sketches and things like that.
Gotcha.
But when it came to air, we just took off, and sometimes I wasn't even there.
Nice.
Yes. Try and find me.
Try and find you. Too many to choose from, you know, the Dennis sketch being one of the most popular, the old man, Mr. Tudball, and various characters you played from week to week. I heard you tell a story that the Dennis sketch was actually influenced by one of your own dentists.
Yes, it was. He was going to fill a back tooth of mine, and he took the Novocaine needle, and he stuck the needle into my cheek from the inside of my mouth. It went through my cheek and into his own thumb.
Oh, jeez.
And he immobilized his hand, so I thought, this will be swell. So that's what it really came from. And eventually we did the sketch where I immobilized my entire body.
Your entire body. So after 50 years in show business, you finally wrote a book, which I absolutely loved.
Well, I finally learned how to write. Yeah.
That's good. That's a good thing. You know, and it tells us about your, you know, your childhood and so forth and your long storied career. How long did it take you to pull all this together and write this book?
2 days. Actually.
Really? Wow.
Actually, it was very short. I would say 3 days, actually.
It's because it's not a pamphlet. It's a really full, hard-covered, one-inch size novel.
So it's
amazing that it only took you that short a time.
Well, I type very rapidly.
Uh-huh. Nice. Well, when you got out of the Army in 1958, your sense of humor came out, and you started actually, before you did television and the movies, you started on radio.
Yes, I did. I sat on the radio for a while, and they said, get off the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went to TV, and the Army was kind of unusual. The Army doesn't have much sense of humor, so
no.
I spent 2 years and 2 weeks in the Army. Okay. The extra, when you're court-martialed, they add that on to the end.
Did you entertain while you were in the Army? I mean, it was more about cracking people up?
I thought I was entertaining until they said, stop doing that. And, the Army just doesn't have that big a sense of humor. So, I quickly shut that up.
Yeah, exactly. So outside of radio, you transitioned into local television. Tell me a little bit about Ernie's Place.
Well, Ernie Anderson was a guy from Cleveland who we sold to a station, WJW, that in Cleveland that was, he was the talent and I was the director. He had very little talent and I had never directed. So the first week, we never got the show off. We were showing a movie. It was supposed to be off at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I could never back time it to get off at 10. So at the end of the week, people would call up and say, you know, where are the ends of these movies? So we would show the ends on Friday.
All together.
Yeah, right. For those of you who missed.
That's great. I love that. Wasn't Ernie Anderson, wasn't he like a haunted, like a horror host, like a movie host later?
Yes, he was. Goulardi.
Goulardi. That's right. So that
very
was your
big, actually.
Yeah, very much so. But that was your first crack at television.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Now, you stated that Rose Marie from the Dick Van Dyke Show was in Cleveland. Now, was she doing a tour? Was she on some? You mentioned the Mike Douglas show.
She was publicizing the Dick Van Dyke Show. She came through Cleveland, and we were with the reason I was on. The show a lot was we were supposed to have a guest every day that would talk to Ernie, but we couldn't get anybody to guest because the show was so bad. So I was the guest every day, and he would say, well, here's Pablo, a chef who is going to be talking to us today, and we would just take off for about 20 minutes on Pavlov and the chef, and I would be that character. And every day we did something like that.
So, you know, in early television too, I mean, that's really where you cut your teeth in this. So if you really had to come up with something new every day, I mean, this was really what kind of launched it for you.
Yeah. Well, I never knew what he was going to say. He would say, here's a horse trainer, here's a tree trimmer, or whatever, you know, and then we would just go out and ad lib about 10 minutes. And we taped a couple of those, and Rosemarie happened to see a couple of those, and she thought, boy, these are really funny. And I said, you think that's funny? You ought to read some of the reviews we're getting. You know, this show, you want to see stink, see this guy in the morning at 10 o'clock. So she took some of those back to Steve Allen, and Steve's, you know, crazy. He had Don Knotts, Louie Nye, and Tom Poston at the time. So he said, yeah, let's bring him out here. And so I came out to California, did three shows, and his show was canceled. So I came back to Cleveland. And but before I did, somebody said, you know, the new show is coming out, McHale's Navy, and they're looking for a guy to play Ensign Parker. So I said, well, I've got to go back to Cleveland. And the guy said, but this agent can get you in to play Ensign Parker. And I said, no, I'm having a lot of fun in Cleveland, and we really have a bad show back there, so I have to get back to it. I said, nobody's cornered the bad show the way we have. So I came back to Cleveland, and they said, no, you've got to come out and do this Parker thing. So I did.
And you did that for, was it 2 years or 3 years on McHale's Navy?
Actually, it was on for 4 years.
Okay.
It was in black and white, and that's the reason it got canceled, because they figured they couldn't sell. Everybody was going to color, and they didn't have anything in color. So I said, well, I could, you know, I could paint these things.
Right.
They said, no, we got 4 years in black and white, and we'll never sell it. So no reason to continue with it. So they took it off.
What was it like working with Ernest Borgnine? I know you guys were friends for years.
He really was. was, yeah. He was like a big teddy bear, you know. I mean, and the nicest guy in the world. I mean, he's the kind of guy who would drive around the country in the summertime and just park his car and go up on somebody's porch and sit there with him and talk, you know, as he drove across the country.
And friends for the rest of your life. You actually did SpongeBob with him years later, too.
Yes, yeah. Yes. How very proud of that.
How much fun. Hey, that's a funny show. I got to tell you.
Well, when you tell your kids
what they're saying,
that you've scored in life, I think SpongeBob is high on your.
Yeah, they're going to play a role. So now, after you were already on McHale's Navy for a couple years, in the book, you spoke about Chagrin Hardware back in Ohio, run by Ken Schutz, who, you know, was also your town psychologist as well.
Yeah. Well, whenever you did anything wrong in town, you would go to Jim, and he would tell you what you had done wrong and make you count, you know, like nuts and bolts and things and put them in the correct order.
It was your penance. Your penance.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time with him because I was always screwing up in school.
I'm sure. But during this time, your mother called you after you were on TV for a few years and told you, you know, if it didn't work out, he had an open position for you.
Yeah, he was hiring, my mother said, and she said, you know Jim rather well. Maybe if you came back here and talked to him, you could get that job because he was hiring one more guy.
Yeah, maybe you could move up a little.
Hardware.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Was it that she was she supporting you as an actor, or was she just really looking out for you?
I don't think she ever saw anything I did.
Is that right? That's too bad. That's too bad. Well, you did all kinds of other shows, too, in the 60s. You did the Dean Martin Show and Danny Kaye and Red Skelton, but it was the Gary Moore Show where you first met Carol Burnett.
So Carol came out, and she was doing her show, and I had met her on the Gary Moore Show, and she said, come out and do my show. And I said, okay. I said, how many are you doing in here? And she said, we would like you to do all 33 shows. And I said, well, I don't want to tie myself down that much. So I'll tell you what, I'll do 32. And the last week, I'll guest on somebody's show. I would always guest on her show.
Wow.
Wow.
So really, yeah, at the end of the day, it was just 33.
Yeah.
What do you want people to take away from this book?
They should take the wrapper off it
right,
so they can read it.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
I would say that you can have fun in life, you know, without regardless of where you are in life, you can make something out of it. And I think that humor is something that we all would like to have a little more of, especially nowadays, you know.
Absolutely.
Tim Conway defies description. His brain never slows down, and those little wheels are constantly churning out original chunks of genius that amaze us all. And the fact that he is even nicer than he is talented is the best thing you could know about.